This podcast is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network, and it's also proud to be from Texas. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is the 2B2 Podcast. Daddy, Dave,
and Steve
are awesome.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Daddy. Happy birthday to you.
As long as you we're don't
just
hear
gonna,
it.
Yeah, we're just going to call it good and say the devil with it.
Devil with it.
Devil with it.
Devil went down to Dave's house.
Yeah, he was looking for Star Wars to steal. He was in a bind. He's way behind. He's willing to make a deal.
Deal for what, though?
Yeah, but, probably that Celebration Luke up there, because those guys are expensive. They were like hot commodity at one point in time. I don't know if they still are, but yeah.
Who would, do you think that, see, I always grew, when growing up, I always thought the devil had a better part in the,
and his, music, and his song was better too. I always wanted to hear that done as like a somebody do that as like a metal cover almost. Like, I think it would be a cool cover, man. Especially like that part, like you said, like the devil song where it's like dun 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 dun. Because I always because the way I wanted to do it whenever I was doing it, I brought that idea up, and I wanted to have that as like kind of like a breakdown and have that as like the bass play in that part, of course, me being a bass player, and it would have just turned out like really cool if you asked me. It just that yeah,
I could see that. You should do that.
All right,
pull the bass out. Let's do it right now.
Yeah,
I'll sing.
Yeah, there we go.
Speaking of bass player, Randy Trujillo.
Yeah, Robert Trujillo.
Robert Trujillo. Yeah. I always forget his name.
How dare you? I can't believe that you forget his name.
Did you see the video of him and Kirk Hammett playing? See, I'm a big Metallica fan.
Yeah.
Just as big of a Prince fan.
Okay. Me. Yeah.
Way back.
Yeah.
And I remember working, I had this job and this guy was bringing up, so you listen to Prince?
I'm you like, listen to Prince?
He's like, I'm like, yeah. He said, nah, you don't, because he.
Are you funny, boy?
No, he was like, he didn't believe me.
Yeah.
He didn't believe me. I'm like, yeah, this song. Anyhow, I love Metallica.
Yeah.
And I love Kirk Hammett and Trujillo, but they did a cover of, like, during the break for Lars and James.
Yeah.
They do this thing apparently where they will do like a local legend song. So they're in up where Prince lived, and they did When Doves Cry.
Oh, cool.
And usually it'll be, of course, bass playing bass, and he'll sing the song while Kirk Hammett plays the guitar.
Yeah.
Kirk Hammett, in my opinion, one of the best guitarists ever.
Yeah.
Know, up there.
He loves that wah pedal a lot too.
But
wow, wow, wow.
Listen to it. To me, they butchered that song so bad.
Really?
When I saw like they had done it, I was like, this is going to be awesome. But no, it's terrible.
That terrible. Don't you hate that, too? Because, like, I will say, like, Metallica is usually one of those bands that can, like, take a song and make it better.
Make it their own, too.
Yeah, make it their own, but, like, they added, like, an extra punch to it and stuff like that. Like, Whiskey in the Jar, even though that's an old Irish song, but by Thin Lizzy. I mean, the original version's good. But then the Metallica version adds that extra punch to it. Same thing with On a Lonely Lonesome Highway, East of Omaha. Listen, I can't think of the name of the song. Turn the Page by Bob Seger.
Yeah.
It took me a second. But yeah, the cover of Bob Seger that they did, their version was freaking awesome. But yet, it's... I don't know. That's kind of disappointing. I'm going to have to check it out. But it's not necessarily Metallica. It's just Robert Trujillo. And
it's not really serious.
Oh, okay.
It's not like them trying. I know that if they really wanted to go in there and do a cover of that song, they could make a really good version.
Yeah.
It's just like the music didn't sound right.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just me. Dropping about. You know, don't try to do it if you're not going to try to do it justice, especially when it's something like that. Yeah,
I'm going to have to check that out just because, like I said.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not listening to it the right way.
You're probably right because it's like it's not the full band, so it probably might not have that extra added little kick in the no-nos. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kicking the sack, something like that.
Ouch.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, that's kind of what they've always brought to it, was that extra, like I said, that extra punch, that extra gut punch, that extra little bit of extra emotion to it, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I will say, Robert is a pretty good vocalist, I think.
Really?
He could be.
See, I've never even heard him sing. I was about to ask you, so he was actually singing vocals on that whatever?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Pretty neat. And,
Don't break that.
That's breakable stuff there.
I know it.
Did you hear the story about how he was playing like a 12-string guitar one day? He was like playing, throwing some ideas out there, just noodling around with, and James Hetfield was in there sitting. And I guess they were recording, but there's like they're on break, and then Kirk Hammett walks in, and he's like, looks at Trujillo, and he's like just killing it on this acoustic guitar, like,
yeah,
you know, and it's like you can see this look of fear in his eyes that. Oh crap! I might be getting replaced because he was killing it, man.
Yeah, if I remember, I'm pretty sure he's like a pretty well like educated. I don't know if you say educated, but like a pretty good Spanish guitar player. Or whatever.
That's what he was doing. Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah,
didn't that like make the album or something like that too? Isn't there like a small cut of him doing something or
could
whatever?
Be.
Maybe at the beginning of one of the tunes or something. Yeah, I haven't picked up any of the new Metallica stuff. It's not that I don't like Metallica. It's just none of that stuff has been really. It has. I don't know what it is. It's lost. It seems like I don't know if it's lost emotion or whatever. But the new Metallica seems to be missing something.
Something.
Yeah,
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I mean, some of the songs I've heard are pretty good.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And is it just me, or have they done something to the drum track on some of the newer stuff that makes it sound wrong? There's something to my ear that doesn't sound right.
Yeah, and it might just be something about how they've got it EQ'd or whatever. Because you know, it's kind of like whenever you go back, and if you look, there's actually a specific point. I'm not sure exactly of the time frame, but if you go back to like the Primus Brown album, and they recorded the album actually in a house, and they were using a different drummer at the time. It's a Tim Herb Alexander. I think the guy's name was Brian Montoya. Brian the Brain Montoya or something like that. I might be wrong about the last name, but I'm pretty sure his first name was Brian. But anyways, they were using this new drummer, and they recorded it in a house, and the drums just had like a big hollow echo sound to it.
Yeah.
And it just didn't sound good. But that was also like at that time frame, it seemed like that's how everybody was EQing the drums at that point in time.
Yeah.
So somewhere around the Brown album, which I think came out in about like, what was that, about like 96, 98, somewhere in there, all the way up to like 2001, it seemed like just about like, I won't say every album that came out in that time frame, but there was a lot of albums that came out in that time frame that they had this big, hollow, echoey drum sound, and it just, to me, I like a big, heavy drum sound, but I don't want it to echo and reverberate and blah, 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 unless it actually needs to be called for in like the tune or whatever.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
But, yeah... I got to do something real quick.
So. Saw an article. I guess it's like a big anniversary this year for Injustice for All.
Yeah.
And, of course, I saw an article about Jason Newsted, how they treated him. And how when you go listen to that, apparently people that worked on the album when they recorded it said his tracks were amazing.
Yeah.
But you don't get to hear them because they didn't. They kind of just buried it and hid it.
Really? What album was that on? Or
Justice
was...
for All. That's
his
first one. And, you know, he was all gung-ho and trying to, like, prove himself.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just after Cliff Burton died. And I don't know why they had a bad history with him when they finally did get rid of him. He was a good bass player.
He was a really good bass player. He was, you know, a lot of people... I don't have anything against Cliff Burton, but like one of my idols, whatever you want to call them, influences. That's what the word I was looking for. One of my influences whenever I started playing bass was Jason Newsted.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you ever saw whenever I was playing, I used to make faces a lot like what Jason Newsted would and stuff like that. And it just came out of me naturally. It wasn't like I'm trying to imitate him. It's like it could have just been because like maybe I was subconsciously somewhere trying to imitate him. But
all
that was,
the hours. Yeah. I remember the hours of y'all watching the live concerts of them.
Yeah.
Kind of get into you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. God. Yeah. But yeah, it was, you know, I always enjoyed Jason Newsted as Metallica, and I always kind of thought that like you would hear like the earlier albums and you'd hear like that bass sound very pronounced. Like you'd even have like,
you know, God, I don't know how many tunes, especially like the instrumentals, they'd usually break down and have some sort of little bass bridge. And, you know, Ride the Lightning with For Whom the Bell Tolls, right there, the big opening intro is all bass. You know, very, very, very prominent. And then you get to Jason Newsted and it's like,
nothing.
You know, that's it. You would almost like, you could hear the bass if you're really trying to pick it out, but it was very lost in the mix almost.
And I've never really heard a good explanation as why they did that.
Yeah. I don't know. That's
why
yeah.
have him if you don't have faith in his ability, and everybody around said he was great. I mean, live people in live shows could hear him.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, why bury him?
Yeah. That's a good question. I've got no idea.
Lars, James, Kirk, come on.
What are you guys doing? Come on, man.
Let us know. Why did you treat poor Jason so
we
bad?
We need we need the band of Metallica to contact us. We'd like to do an on-air interview with both of you guys and or all three of you. That would be great. Well, I wonder if we could, man, if we could orchestrate the
Dave Mustaine and Lars Ulrich sitting down together. Right? Not ever going to happen.
Could you imagine getting Dave Mustaine, Lars Ulrich, James Hetfield, Kirk Hammett also in there because Kirk replaced Dave Mustaine.
See, here's
and
the
then
thing,
also
though,
throwing Jason Newsted.
Throw them all in the same room.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Kirk Hammett, David Mustaine doesn't have any ill will to Hammett, because this was another thing I saw not long ago. Lars Ulrich, though, he still to this day, Mustaine says, for that first Kill 'Em All, he said, I'm still not getting credit
really
for a lot of the songs I wrote, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna whatever, but apparently a lot of bad blood still between Lars and him.
Really?
Lars kind of, you ever see Lars in an interview and little bit annoying.
Yeah.
Oh, a little bit of an attitude.
Yeah, I've always thought that. Like, he's obviously very sure of himself. You can tell it just by how he talks and how he holds his head and waggles around and stuff like that.
Yeah, a little bit too...
You know, but, I mean, he almost has a little bit of that LSS, what I like to call the lead singer syndrome, but yet he's a drummer.
Yeah.
But...
He's a band leader in his mind.
You have to have those people in your band. As much as people don't want to be that person, you have to have those type of people in your band, because they're going to talk you up like you wouldn't believe to the average person out on the street. And they're going to be like, and then it's up to you and your group to then, you know, kick them in the butt and be like, look at how freaking awesome we are, you know, and then word of mouth. Like I always told people, word of mouth is like the most powerful thing in the world.
Really is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the reason why, like, I played in many of places that there was like five people, you know, but you treat those five people like it's 500, because that five people can easily become 500.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? But yeah, like I said, like Lars always had that, like, very sure of himself, or he still does too. Like, even in the movie, what is he in that, Get Him to the Greek. He's in Get Him to the Greek.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, he's in that. And you can even tell in that movie that he's very, not headstrong, but just very sure of himself, just very cocksure, very, very high self-esteem. And that's a great thing to have. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have it, but, you know, it's kind of funny because he's always been the drummer, in the very back end. Like, I always
think. Usually the guy that doesn't get that much attention. I mean,
Lead
singer, lead guitarist.
They're usually hidden behind cymbals and like drums and stuff like that. Yeah.
Unless it's Phil Collins.
Yeah. Right. Or Don Henley.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, no, exactly, man. Like, that's what I always liked about being part of the rhythm section is, like, you know, I couldn't tell you how many places I would go and people would be like, oh, you were in the band? Yeah. It's like, after we just played. Yeah, yeah. I'm the bass player.
See, I would be cool with that, though. Yeah.
No, and I was a lot of times. Like I said, it was just kind of funny because, you know, everybody always gravitate towards, you know, lead singer number one, and then the lead guitar player number two, and then rhythm guitar player number three. And then you got like the rhythm section of the drum and the bass player sitting over there at the end of the bar all by themselves doing shots and drinking beers or whatever, just going like, okay, you guys have fun down there. Leave us over here. We're out of the spotlight. Yeah.
Yeah.
But had a lot of fun. You know, it's.
You're the one lead singer in your one band.
Oh yeah,
he definitely attracted attention.
Oh God, yeah, he did. He definitely did. But you know, like I said, you need those people.
Yeah.
You need those people. You got to have those people in your in your group, your forum, whatever you want to call it, to sell. You know, because I mean, like, think of it. I mean, basically, salesmen kind of do the same thing. They instead of talking up themselves, they're talking up a product.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of like car salesmen. That's what you always tell everybody. Like, I'd be a horrible salesman. I just can't do it because I'd tell you honest. Like, well, honestly, this car kind of sucks. We get them in all the time with all sorts of warranty work and stuff like that. So you probably don't want this.
Trick I learned in sales. And I never would lie to anybody. I would let the person sell the stuff to themselves. I just ask them questions. Well, what do you want? What do you need? That kind of thing. And eventually, they'd end up talking themselves into buying something. I mean, I used to sell computers.
Yeah.
Guess what I know about computers? I know how to turn them. There's an on and off switch, and I can type.
Right. There's an on and off switch?
Well, I think there is, usually. Yeah. A button somewhere.
Yeah, I'm surprised that there is still. I'm surprised they haven't gotten rid of that.
I could sell them because, you know, I knew enough about them that people would ask questions. And but, geez, now, no, I don't know anything about it. But I could still sell. I can sell stuff.
Yeah. I've just never been good at it because, like you said, like you're supposed to try to like upsell them a little bit. But then again, I can't bring myself to kind of talk people into upselling it. Just be like, well, sorry guys. You're right. You probably don't need that. So why are you even, but yet the whole point is to try to upsell them on stuff.
Yeah. When I had this other job where I have to go quote like working, okay, we're going to do this in your yard, cut this tree down, build a garden, put some turf in, all this stuff. Right.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, for little old ladies. And I'm like, she doesn't, I don't think, I can't really charge her what my boss would want me to charge because she looks like she's got a lot of money. And meanwhile, she probably has a lot of money, but that's why. And I'd always underbid jobs and stuff like that. I was never good at that.
Yeah.
I couldn't because I felt bad. I'm like, I don't want to overcharge you.
Yeah. Somebody that you know that's on a fixed income. Like, they're like, that person, she reminds me of my grandma. I can't do that to her. No, I hear you, dude. Like, that's that, and see, that would be my issue as well. Is like, I'm like, well, okay, like, I know I'm supposed to get every blasted cent that I possibly can, but I can't bring in myself to do it. Like, yeah.
But I worked for guys that could go in and get the job, and just that's why they're the boss, and that's why they make a lot more money because they knew how to price it right.
Yeah, let me just go in here and I'll do the work for you. You go in and handle talking to the people and making the sell.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that bugs me the most whenever, like, the salesman just can't take no for an answer. It's like, look, I don't want that. Car salesmen are the worst.
My wife went to get a car way back 2007. She was looking at buying a Yaris. They took her car keys of the car she owned at the time.
Yeah.
And we're going to go take a look at it, have some people look, because trade-in, right?
Yeah.
They wouldn't give her keys back, because she's like, it was a big purchase for her and a big deal, and she was hesitant to actually pull the trigger that day on buying the car.
Yeah.
They wouldn't give her keys back. Oh, no, just think about it. And I got up, I went to the sales manager, I went back past everybody into the office, I said, tell your guy to go get my wife's keys and have them here right now because we're leaving.
Yeah.
Well, what? I said,
no.
I want my wife's keys. She's upset now. Give her keys.
Yeah.
I got the keys. And then she went back the next day and bought the car. But that pressure she felt, it freaked her out.
No, exactly. And that
really made me mad.
Yeah.
You don't do that to somebody.
And that's the whole, like, part of playing the game of buying something that big, you know, is that they're going to try to put the pressure on you and not give you your keys back because that keeps you from walking away from the sell. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done that before myself to where it's like my truck that I had before the one I got right now.
Yeah.
I'd gone in was working with the guy, and he was trying to sell me this one truck, and I was like, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. Basically, can't afford that per month. You know, they were wanting to get me in a payment more than what I already had, and it's like I didn't want to go up on payments. I wanted to go down. I was buying a vehicle with less amenities and all like this type of stuff. I wanted to go down in payments, not keep them the same or pay even more.
Yeah.
Because that's what they always want you to do. They always want you to pay more, pay more, pay more. No, I was trying to cut down prices a little bit and stuff like that. Like, if anything, I'll just keep driving the vehicle. But I didn't want to drive the vehicle because it was a piece of crap and I want to get out from underneath it. So, basically, like, we couldn't come to an agreement. And, you know, I got up and walked out. This is me cutting down a long story really, really short because there was two vehicles, technically. They were both the same price. One of them was a GM. One of them was a Chevrolet. One of them was fully loaded. One of them barely had any amenities on it at all. And he wanted me to pay the same amount per month on the one with less amenities as what I would have on the one with fully loaded. Now, I was like, but why would I do that? Because this one doesn't have as many amenities. To me, that one should be cheaper because it doesn't have the power windows and it doesn't have the power locks and it doesn't have the carpet on the floor and all like this type of crap. I don't want carpet on the floor to begin with because that just means it's something I can get mud on. Then I got
to hard to clean. Yeah,
exactly. I'd rather have the rubber floors. But yeah, and so like the guy's like, oh, so you want to pay less on this one? Well, yeah. And he goes, well, I don't guess we're going to come to a deal today. I said, I guess not. And I got up and started to walk out. And I got in my car. And as soon as I got in my car to go to leave, he comes running out of the door. And, of course, at this point in time, I still smoke cigarettes. And he was like, oh, wait. Let me go talk to my boss, blah, blah, blah. I guess he saw that I was serious, that I was going to leave. And he goes, let me go talk to my boss and see if I can see what I can do. And I was like, all right, cool. I said, I'll tell you what. I'm going to stand here. I'm going to smoke this cigarette. By the time you get back, I said, you have till that time to get back. If you're not back by that time, I'm taking off. And so he came back like 2 minutes later and was like, not 10 minutes later, but 2 minutes later. And he's like, yeah, we can work. He goes, I can't get you down. It was like $225 a month. This has been a while, obviously, because the last truck I had over 10 years.
Yeah.
But like, he goes, I can't get you down to $225 a month, but I can get you down to $227 a month. Does that work? I was like, that works, man. Let's do this. So, and so I got it at the price that I wanted, at the payment that I wanted. And there we were, you know, Bob's your uncle, everything was all said and done. But like I said, they keep those keys.
Bob is my uncle. Or was.
Right.
We lost him, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, you know, I think he's my uncle, too. Or was it?
That's a different Bob.
Oh, that's a different Bob. Okay,
I think there was another Bob.
I think there was another Bob, wasn't there?
The Bob.
I'm sure there was.
On this side. Yeah. Our side of the family. My mom's side, I had a Bob.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was trying to think of.
They keep your keys.
Yeah.
Derailed.
Sons of bitches. Keeping my keys. Hey, everybody. Welcome to 2BT. I'm David.
I'm Michael.
Yeah, we'll do that 20 minutes into the episode. Yeah, make everybody look. Anyways, I think all this talk about music and stuff like that came up because I actually found what is not a new artist. I'd never heard about it before, but I heard about a movie that they had made, and I sent it to you, the trailer to you.
Because, and I had heard of him.
Yeah, I knew Michael would have heard of him because he's a big underground Texas legend, basically, just about, I guess. Like,
yeah, Blaze Foley.
Yeah. And as soon as you said that, you sent me a text earlier saying that you were listening to him and he was about to make you cry. And I was like, okay, I got to check this out. So I downloaded just one album and started listening to it there in the living room. Because it's like I'm watching football. I don't need the sound of football. I can listen to music and watch football. And yeah, it's
which one did you?
I'm sold.
Listen to.
I got the. Let me pull it up real quick. I got the live album.
Oh, okay, at Austin Outhouse.
Yeah,
that's what I was listening to. And he got to one song.
Which let me guess. Hold on just a second. Is it the? Let me see here. Hold on. If I Can Only Fly.
That's the one that I told you about. Merle Haggard covered this, and I didn't know. This is before I knew about Blaze.
Yeah.
And I had the album Merle Haggard did years ago, and that he named the album that, If I Could Only Fly. And it's just, and even Merle's version of it is just a killer song, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I learned about Blaze Foley from Townes Van Zandt.
Okay.
And I've talked about him, but I don't talk about him a lot because I hesitate to because I hold him in such reverence.
Yeah.
In my head, he was just one of the most perfect songwriters there are.
Yeah.
He wrote, I told you about when I got here, he wrote perfect songs. There are songs out there. He has some perfect songs. You know, I think Bob Dylan has some perfect songs.
Yeah.
You can, you know it when you, it hits you. It's like these people gather something from the ether.
Yeah.
It's magic.
Yeah.
It's like, it's somehow completely, and I don't care if we're talking about Metallica, they could, I think maybe they might have one or two songs I would consider perfect.
Yeah.
And in some way it touches something that, either it shoots like a lightning bolt through you to energize you, or it can like crush you, but in a good way.
Yeah.
Because, and Blaze Foley, listening to him, and I'd listened to the first song on the playlist that I was listening to had a song called Clay Pigeons, which is a beautiful song.
That is a beautiful song.
If I Could Only Fly. And then I listened to a song I'd never heard before called, let me look it up real quick. And it almost it's like a punch to the gut. Picture cards can't picture you.
Okay.
And then I listened to a lot more, and there's some funny songs.
Yeah.
He had the listening to one of the favorite things about it, and I'm glad you got the live one, because listening to him talk between the songs.
Yeah.
Some weird things coming out of this dude's mouth, and he's a colorful character.
Yeah.
Because he had this thing back in the 70s when during the urban cowboy thing, and people used to have those silver tip boots.
Yeah.
He started wearing duct tape on his boots.
Yeah. I read a Wikipedia thing about him.
And the thing about the jacket, did you think, see how he died though?
Yeah. Where he was shot.
Yeah. He got shot in Towns. Most of what I knew about him, I learned from Towns Van Zandt and listened to interviews with him.
Yeah.
When he died, I think he had pawned his guitar.
Yeah.
And they went and dug him up
to get the pawn ticket.
Towns and some friends went to get the pawn ticket, because Towns had the guitar afterwards.
Yeah.
A guy that he loved. And neither one of those guys had lots of success. And I think a lot of it's because they were both self-destructive people.
Yeah.
And that's what's really cool about this movie, the trailer. Ethan Hawke's making it, right?
Yeah. It's Ethan Hawke's playing it. And Ethan Hawke plays, apparently he has a small part where you don't even see his face. You see the back of his head.
Okay.
Because he wants to stay, I guess, kind of like anonymous. But yet it's already been leaked that he plays this radio DJ, this interview in town.
Yeah. And I think I might even have that interview at home. Anyhow, I went and looked at the New York Times review of it.
Yeah.
And it's got a pretty good write-up, but he says the guy that plays Towns pretty much steals a lot of the scenes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, well, who is that guy? Charlie Sexton, the guitarist.
Know. Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you know him.
Yeah.
And he does look a lot like Towns Van Zandt.
Really?
I'm just curious about this, because it's something I love, and it's like word of mouth.
Yeah.
By, you know, it's not doing Blaze Foley any good.
Yeah.
His music is being heard, but it maybe can do good for people that get to hear it.
Yeah, do good for whoever has the rights to it, I guess, basically. But, and I mean, to me, like, you know, coming from, I won't call myself an artist, but coming from somebody, I guess I can, but coming from somebody that's done that before, like, I never gave a damn about how much money I made.
Right.
All I wanted to do was share my craft with people and wanted people to hear it. Like, I didn't care. I didn't care if people were singing along to the songs. I didn't care if people, all I cared about is A, if you'd heard it,
yeah.
B, what you thought, and C, if you were having a good time.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was all I cared about. I didn't give a damn about the money. You know, nobody, and if you're in that industry, if you're in that art for the money, then you're not, I don't want to sound cliche and say you're not doing it for the right reason, but technically you're not doing it for the right reason, because to me, music is an emotional thing.
Yeah.
Like really good albums that you can listen all the way through, to me, mm-hmm. takes you on an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
You know, it takes you up, it takes you down, it takes you all over the place. It'll make you laugh, it'll make you cry, it'll give you chill bumps, it'll, you know, make you depressed.
Yeah.
It'll speak to you in a way that that your friends can't.
Yes.
Like, I can sit there and name 10 songs that I listened to over and over and over again after I got divorced.
Yeah.
You know, and that was it. You know, because I thought that my world was crashing down. I thought everything was ending. And they were super depressing songs. I'm surprised I lived through it, because it's like, dude, what the hell were you thinking of? But, like, you know, that was my emotional status at that time. But, you know, it is, you know, To me, like, that's what it is. And a lot of times, like, I always tell people, like, I like a song that moves, that bounces, that whenever you listen to it, it feels like it has a hop to the rhythm part of it that just kind of makes you want to, like, almost, like, jump in place. And that's one of the reasons, like, that was one of the greatest things that I'd ever see, like, playing on stage is whenever you've got, like, a group of people down there in front of you and they're, like, hopping to the music. And you're like, yeah, you're feeling it. You're getting it. It's touching you at this moment. And that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's touching you at that moment.
I think it's music. Well, all art, if you can just group art.
Oh, yeah.
Great writing.
Whether it be visual.
A movie.
Yeah.
A painting.
Oh, yeah.
It's not necessarily going to hit everybody the same way.
Oh, no.
But a lot of it will.
Yeah.
There's some kind of, I don't want to use such an empty word as truth, but there's like they've tapped into something in a good, something special. Part of them is in it, in a way.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh yeah, that's like I was gonna mention earlier because like whenever you're talking about Towns Van Zandt just being able to write like perfect songs, like that to me is always like amazed me because like I always wrote in like a collaboratory setting. Mm-hmm. It's always a collaboration. Like it would be me. Like I'd come with this part, and then somebody else would come with this part, and then somebody else would come with this part, and you throw it in a pot, and you make the little stew out of it, and you trim out the fat, and you make it all up, and you've got like this meal that you serve to people, and says like, "Hey, have my dinner," or whatever. But whenever those people can actually themselves sit there and do all the work of what I've only been able to do in like a group setting, like amazes me, man, because it's like. And it's sad to say it, like, the most disturbed people write the best music.
Yeah. Well, it's okay, Towns. I believe this is the right song. Poncho and Lefty. Been covered by, it's number one hit by Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson. It's been done by.
See, I didn't know that was by Towns.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Didn't know it. Story about how he came to write that. He was actually had a show, I think, down in Dallas or Fort Worth, one of the two. But I think he said some Maharishi or guru or something like that was having a big thing down in Dallas. And Billy Graham was in town having a big revival of Christian thing.
Yeah.
So there was no hotel room. So he ended up having to go up to Gainesville, Texas, just north of here where we are now. Got a little motel room. And he's like, people around Gainesville back in the 70s, I grew up around here. There wasn't a lot to do there. So I'm pretty sure he was in his motel room and he said, I'm going to sit down and write a song. And I'm not going to get up till I finish it. Yep.
Sorry, I couldn't read this.
There you go.
Here, let me turn that down. I'll turn it down some and I'll play this in the background.
And he sat and he wrote that song.
Yeah. This is probably like my go-to song for Willie Nelson.
Yeah.
This is one of them. And that and 7 Spanish Angels, the one that he did with Charlie Pride. Ray Charles. Like, dude, 7 Spanish Angels, like, that's a special song. Sorry, I don't mean to, like totally take it off of Towns Van Zandt.
No.
Yeah. But it's such a great tune.
It is, yeah.
And I did not know that this was written by Towns Van Zandt.
Yeah, he wrote that.
Really?
And the only reason it got on the album is because I think it was Merle Haggard's daughter. Or it might have been Willie's daughter. Waylon and Willie did him and Merle and they needed an extra song. They needed one more song for the album. And his daughter had the Towns Van Zandt album and said,
really?
Hey Dad, check this out. And they're like, well, that's pretty good. And next thing you know, it's like, that's one of those, I listened to an interview with Everlast. He's like, that's one of those mailbox songs. They get that check every month.
Yeah.
Because, you know, other people cover it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
I grew up listening to that song. I never knew. I found Towns Van Zandt late, and I only found him because at the end of Big Lebowski.
Oh, okay.
He's covering Rolling Stones' Dead Flowers.
Oh, really?
And I'm like, there's something there. And
I think you told me that.
I think before. There's something between you and me. I don't know if it's in our blood, but obsession.
Yeah.
Looking around this room that we're sitting in, I'm a very obsessive person. When I find something that I, like, absolutely love.
Yeah, you go after it.
I go into it, and that's how I found Towns, through that. And I went and, you know, grabbed everything, listened to everything I could possibly get, bootlegs, you know, digging on the internet. And that's how I learned about Blaze Foley. And I want to see this movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm, you know, time-wise when I'm going to get to. It's playing here in Denton.
Is now, it?
At Alamo Draft House.
Oh.
But it's like at 9:45 at night.
I actually went to the Alamo Draft House last Sunday.
You said you were going to go see a movie.
Yeah, I went and saw that Happy Time Murders. Freaking hilarious, by the way. It's so bad. It's so bad.
Do not
so
watch that. Funny. Don't play that with kids around.
No. It's definitely not a puppet show for kids.
No.
And it's by Henson also. It's Brian Henson, I think crazy. Is his name. Yeah, it's
Jim Henson.
Jim Henson's son. Jim Henson Jr.'s son, because both Jim Hensons grandson. Are dead. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyways, yeah, sorry about that. Like,
but no, yeah. Yeah, I want to see this. And the good thing about it is because the kind of movie it is, it's not going to be long before it's available for DVD.
No, so. Exactly. Because it is an independent flick. I want to say it's like, was it done by IFC? Well, I know they played it at Sundance and it won some award at Sundance, like Judges or what was it? Jury, something other. Like, I don't know the Sundance stuff. Like, I know that that's kind of one of the prominent movie festivals, you know, along with Cannes, or however the devil you pronounce it. Toronto Film Festival also.
South by Southwest does a film.
Yeah, South by Southwest. And, you know, I know that it won some awards there at Sundance, and that's kind of how I heard about it, because I heard about it. Okay. I was on NPR because I like to feel like I'm smart, so I listen to NPR a lot. And I heard them talking about this Blaze Foley and Texas music legend and stuff. Cool.
Was it just about the movie, or did they have like Ethan Hawke on there?
It was just about the movie.
Okay.
And I didn't hear the entire thing about it, because I want to say it was like maybe like a 10 or 15 minute interview, and it was just kind of like I was listening to one channel and flipped it over and I caught it in the middle of it. And whatever I thought about it, I was like, ooh, I need to tell Michael about this, because I'm pretty sure that he'll want to hear about it, because the only reason why I even thought to send it to you is because they brought up Towns Van Zandt, and I knew that you were a huge fan of Towns Van Zandt.
Yeah, you got me there.
Yeah.
That I wish I could find that interview, the review.
Yeah.
To said one of the cool things in it, it's a good review. Ethan Hawke, I liked some of the movie. He's made some good movies. As an actor, I like him, and then I've seen some movies he's made. They're good. The guy that wrote the review for the New York Times said, I would not be sad if Blaze, this movie we're talking about, kicked off a trend, and I could look forward to sad, smoky, whiskey-saturated movies about the lives and times of Guy Clark, Ray Wally Hubbard, Robert Earl Keane, and of course, the great Towns Van Zandt.
Dude, that gave me chill bumps, because I would love it. That would just be,
Now, see, okay.
Show those.
You don't even have to wait for a biopic about Towns. I say, if you have, I'm sure you can get it online. I know iTunes, Amazon probably has it.
Yeah.
There's a beautiful, absolutely so well done documentary called Be Here to Love Me.
Okay.
It's about the life of Towns Van Zandt. And he's got his wife and kids on there. Just really, really good live performances. The thing about Towns, he was just pretty much a hippie dude. There's this one clip where he's basically wearing like buckskin pants and jacket with the frills and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And
with the long tassels hanging off.
Yeah. His story is really sad, too, about how he got committed to a mental asylum when he was young.
Oh, wow.
And he was given shock treatments and stuff, and they said he was never the same after that.
Really?
His family signed off on them
doing the shock therapy or whatever?
Yeah.
Wow.
He would do some, it's like he said, wild, crazy things.
Yeah.
Like Muscatel wine and other stuff. And like one time, he was at a party in Fort Worth. He was at college or something, and they were on the balcony, and he was sitting on the railing of the balcony. And he's like, I just wonder what it would feel like to fall. So he did. Off backwards.
Good grief.
And he lived
through it,
but it's like that kind of thing is what he was doing, that they were like, something's wrong.
Yeah. You know? Again, one of those tortured people that like they make the best, and I don't know what it is, because they have such a raw feel towards life or
empathy.
Whatever. Yeah.
You got to have a great empathy to create a lot of great art, I think. Like writing or doing a movie. If you want somebody to have empathy for your character, you have to know what it is like to be a different kind of person.
Yeah.
You know, you got to care.
That and the ability to tell the story as well.
Yeah.
To be able to like follow through it. Well, I couldn't do it because you guys have all heard how I tell a story. But, oh, wait, let me go back to this one moment. Like,
no. You're a good storyteller.
Oh, heck. Yeah, no, man. Like, yeah, I didn't know that it was playing at Alamo Drafthouse. I figured it might be at, like, the Angelic or something like that.
I bet it is, Dallas, too. Whatever. I just looked locally to see where it was, but
I bet we can make that happen because I'd like to go see it, honestly.
Yeah.
I'd like to actually have, because I think I've said it before, like, there's something about going to the theater.
I love that.
And sitting in the chairs and watching it on the big screen and the good sound system and stuff. And I've got like a pretty decent TV and a pretty decent surround sound system and stuff like that. But I still would much rather go see a movie in the theater and have the spectacle.
Yeah.
Instead of just the watching it at home, even though you might watch it in the dark, it just puts me to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of times
I was fortunate enough to get to see that. And that Be Here to Love Me has been out for a while.
Yeah.
So it's definitely available. I saw it in the theater and it was definitely pretty cool seeing it on the big screen. Something about that just big.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care if you have a 70 inch TV.
Oh, yeah. No. Still not going to duplicate it.
Yeah.
You can have a whole wall dedicated to it. Still not going to duplicate it. No, and I was reading, going to the whole thing where you're talking about towns being like basically like a hippie. I was reading the Blaze Foley like Wikipedia thing.
Or yeah.
Apparently, I guess, like, I can't think of what his girlfriend's name was. I never did say if they like got married or whatever. So I don't think it was his wife, but his partner, his girlfriend, whatever you want to call her, they met, I think, at like an artist like commune in Georgia.
Oh, really?
Or something like that. And then they decided to leave that to follow his music, to like kind of like progress his music. And so they moved to like, or played in like Chicago, New York, Chicago, Houston, and wound up settling in Austin. And that's where they say that he really, really flourished from, was there in Austin. But, it was actually a pretty interesting read. A lot of times you'll get to Wikipedia and it's like, oh crap, this is pretty boring. But it did cover the duct tape thing where he would, you know, he would make fun of the urban cowboyers and that had the steel cap tips on the boots. And so he'd put, you know, duct tape over the tips of his boots and then made a suit out of duct tape or whatever.
Yeah.
And his loyal fans is what they said whenever he died, they put duct tape on his casket. I think
they wrapped it.
Oh, really?
That's what I saw.
Yeah. And then I read the thing about Towns Van Zandt. It didn't say that they did dig him up. They said that they wanted to dig him up to get the pawn ticket.
See, I don't know if they did or not. I remember, I have to go back because I have the interview where he's talking about doing this.
Yeah. You might have to dig that up and put that at the end of the show.
I might do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he died in February. I think it was really cold, though, and they might have had trouble digging. I do know that I think he got the guitar out of pawn, though, somehow.
I could see that you could. Just, you got to show a certificate of death and be like, look, certificate of death. Yeah. All of those pawn guys are kind of they're kind of stingy with that crap.
Duct Tape Messiah.
Yeah,
he's known as Duct Tape Messiah and Deputy Dog.
Yeah,
DAWG. Just like I said, when you listen to that, just listen to the way he talks about things.
Yeah,
I can't even do it justice. It's just like he'd be saying something. I know what he's saying, but then he'll throw in some other weird line like, he wanted a shot of bourbon. It's for medicinal purposes. He's like. Yeah, watching whales die on CNN makes it medicinal.
What?
What are you talking about?
No,
watching
kidding.
Whales die. I guess it's like some whales had got killed or beached or something. Yeah. And then he's got this other really cool song called A Christian Lady on the Bus. And I only got halfway through it. And it is, his story about leading up to it is just a hoot.
Really? Yeah. God, man. Yeah, see, I'm... Yeah, we might have to try to make time to go check that movie out, man. Because like I really want to see it. Just the trailer alone made me want to see it.
Yeah.
But then after digging up his music and then reading the Wikipedia about him has really got me, I guess you could say, like almost like enthralled with this person. Like I need to kind of learn a little bit more about him and see what it was or whatever. And apparently, I guess this movie is supposed to be a great depiction of of it or whatever. I don't know.
Same here. I know you hear the song. Have you heard of Lucinda Williams? She's an Americana singer, songwriter, artist. Yeah. She's been around for years. She's in that same niche or group of people that, if you know, you know, if you listen to Guy Clark or Robert Earl Keane, more than likely you've probably heard her at some point in time because they'll like be on each other's albums and stuff.
Yeah.
Anyhow, she has a song called Drunken Angel.
Okay.
That's on the trailer that came out years ago, and it's a song about him.
Oh, okay.
About Blaze.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it could have just easily been written about Towns.
Yeah. Because
they both had a substance.
Very similar, yeah.
Problem.
Yeah, and they were both, apparently, I guess they were pretty close friends as well or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and reading about his death, Blaze Foley's death or whatever.
Crazy though, yeah. Right?
Shot by his friend's son or whatever.
Yeah.
And then even his friend was trying to testify against his son, and his testimony was thrown out because he was like basically like a known alcoholic or something like that, I guess, or something. So
yeah, Blaze confronted his friend's son, accusing him of taking
his pension.
Pension, like veterans benefits or something like that, and the son got mad. Something happened, and he got off on self-defense.
Yeah.
Shot a guy, shot Blaze Foley in the chest, killed him.
Ooh.
Spoiler.
Yeah.
Don't need to go watch the movie now.
Go watch the movie, because it'll be a great story.
I'm expecting good things from it.
Speaking of great stories, man, I watched a good movie last night. I enjoyed it a lot. It had a lot of cliche, kind of hokey moments, but it's 12 Strong, I think is the name of it. Yeah. It's, at first I thought it was kind of funny because it had, Thor and General Zod in it. But, like, I was like, yeah, it's a Marvel and DC crossover.
Really?
But it's a true story, or based on a true story.
This is the one about the guys on the horse.
Yeah, the horse. Were
they special forces?
They were special forces, Green Berets, and they went into Afghanistan. And I can't remember exactly what the operation was, but they were trying to get to one town. And I can't think of the blast. And I should have done more research on this on Wikipedia and like come with it, because like I would have made like. But I've been like so wrapped up in this Blaze Foley dude all morning long that I'm just like, oh, okay, well, sorry, I just kind of totally forgot about everything. Like I said, it's a really good movie. I enjoyed it. Probably won't be one that I'll buy. It's kind of one of those that, like, it's got its moments that it's got the cliche hokey war movie stuff or whatever, but then it's got the really great moments to where you're like, okay, this is a really good movie. But
it's a definitely, if it's on, it's not a buy, but it's a definitely watch.
Yeah, definitely watch. Like, I rented it on Amazon last night for $2.99, and I think I've got it for like a week or 48 hours or something like that, so I can watch it again if I want to. So I'm like, that might happen tonight.
That's a pretty good rating system, because you had asked me, should I buy Hostiles or not? I'm like, I can't. I hate telling people to buy stuff on my recommendation, but I'm like, it's something I want to watch again.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So,
and that's why I'm glad that they put Hostiles on Netflix, because it's one of those right now that where it's like, it's on Netflix, I won't buy it.
Yeah.
But if I see it for cheap somewhere, I'll probably wind up picking it up, just because like it's a really good movie. I enjoy the devil out of it.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay full price for it.
It's kind of like 310 to Yuma. You've seen 310 to Yuma?
Good movie.
It is a very good movie. And that's one of them that, like, I've got it. I bought it a while ago. I think I paid like $10 for it. I think it still got the cellophane on it, because
I wanted to have it,
but it's one of those movies where it's like, I don't know what to watch. Oh, I'll watch 310 to Yuma. But of course, I think that one's on Netflix as well now, so I don't even have to worry about it. But you know, you can't rely on that, because Netflix is always adding things and taking things off. That's the reason why I say, like, if I see it for cheap somewhere, I'll pick it up and buy it. Kind of the same thing with 12 Strong. I enjoyed the devil out of it, but you know, if you see it for a good price, yeah, pick it up. And I think that might have even been like for sale on Netflix for maybe $10.99 or $9.99.
Oh, really?
I can't remember. Now that I think about it, I'll have to go back and look, because if it's really that cheap, I'll probably just go ahead and buy it. But
it's got Rob Riggle in it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does.
Well, he was a Marine.
Yeah.
The comedian guy. He was a Marine.
Now that you mentioned that, I totally, yeah.
Michael Pena, who I really like.
Yeah.
One of my very favorite actors, Michael Shannon.
Which one is he?
He's Zod.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then Chris Hemsworth, William Fichtner.
Yeah.
I'm gonna watch it someday. Yeah,
it's good, man. I enjoy the devil out of it. There's moments where like they're on the horses and like riding and shooting and stuff like that, and it's, you just want to go like, okay, it's not that smooth.
You can't
like,
do that.
I mean, you can ride and shoot, but you're not really gonna be hitting that many targets at the same time. You know,
that's like, what used to kill me on the old westerns all the time. They'd always leave at a gallop, full. Like they'd be in town at the saloon and they get on their horses and just ride out full fast pace as fast as you can go. And then they'd show up wherever they are going as fast as you can go. You don't ride horses like that.
No, you don't.
You don't do it. Your horse will die. Yeah. You can't do it.
The only people that did that might have been the Pony Express. And they only had like so long before they got to the next station where they switched horses. Yeah, no, exactly. But like I will say like there was moments in the movie where it's like, you know, they're like riding and they've got like the camera kind of like over their back shoulder or whatever. So it's like it shows them and they're like sitting there and you're like, you can't, your horse isn't, you're not going to be that smooth on a horse at that speed. I don't care. Like I've ridden some pretty smooth horses where they run, but they're not going to be that smooth. you know, like you're going to be bouncing. I don't care. You're going to be bouncing at least a little bit. Like, I know it's not like going to be throwing you around all over the place like what you would be in a gallop or a trot or whatever, but still, like, yeah.
Can you imagine, though, the guys that used to fight on horseback, the cavalry, and like,
oh, dude.
Just like this, the Native Americans, the Plains tribes, or the buffalo,
yeah,
shooting bows and arrows, riding a horse.
Yeah, or even the Mongols. The Mongols apparently like were great at it. And I think the Mongols carried, like whenever they took their armies, they'd take, like, three horses, so that way they'd constantly have a fresh horse. But, yeah, man, like, I couldn't imagine. I mean, not only that, but, like, have decent accuracy with a bow, nonetheless.
Yeah.
You know, not even a rifle, but a bow. Like, I don't know if you've ever tried to shoot a bow, but it sucks. Like, I can't do it, man. It's just, like...
I've shot a crossbow. Yeah. It's not...
Yeah, a crossbow's really not even all that easy.
The Comanches, some European guy visited back in the mid 19th century and, you know, came across some Comanches and like declared them to be like the finest horsemen in the world.
I can see that, yeah.
But, you know, and they said they actually look more comfortable horseback than when they're just walking, you know, around on their own 2 feet. They were just like the perfect match to the horse. The horse came, and they didn't have the horse. They didn't get horses until like the 1700s.
Yeah.
Before that, they used dogs to pull their little packs around, moving from place to place, and they still hunted. Anyhow.
Yeah. Well, and they're from what I understand, I don't know if it was constant throughout all the tribes, but from what I understand, even most Native American tribes, like the name for horse was basically the same thing for dog.
God dog or something like that. Yeah.
It was just like a larger dog.
And that's why to call back to an earlier, the dog soldiers.
Yeah.
That's why. Yeah. The dogs. They had domesticated dogs a lot earlier.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
And I can't blame them. Dogs are freaking awesome.
Dogs are awesome.
Yeah.
Why would my daughter and wife want another cat? Another cat. Anyhow, I watched movies this week.
Oh, what'd you watch?
Went back and rewatched Lord of the Rings.
Oh, dude, I started that last week myself. Because, like, okay, last week whenever you left, my internet was out. It was out all day on Sunday and part of the day on Monday. Oh, speaking of which, I forgot to call them and get my credit to my account because it was out for over 24 hours.
Yeah.
So, I did the same thing. I started... Fellowship of the Ring, and then I watched The Two Towers, and still need to watch Return of the King, but that one always kind of like, I was like, okay, get ready for the long haul here, because this movie's what, like 3 hours?
They're all long, and I've got the extended editions and just the theatrical. Yeah. We did not watch extended editions, because even just watching the normal theatrical release is just so long.
It is, man.
And that, the Return of the King, I remember sitting in the theater thinking, the movie's over.
Yeah.
I might have been there with you.
You might have been.
The movie's over.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it's not over.
No.
Now the movie's over.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait. Nope. Now the movie's over?
No. No.
And it's like, it's got like five perfect endings. Yeah. Like you were talking about The Expanse. This is where they should have ended it.
Yeah.
But nope. We're just going to keep on trucking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude. Yeah. And I remember when I saw Return of the King in theaters, I was singing the same blasting thing, and I had to pee so bad. So bad that I'm starting to look at my cup going like, dude, this is like, yeah, I think it was. It's been one of those things where it's like, I don't know if it's just that we've seen so many movies together. It's just that we've seen so many movies that it's just like, oh my God. Like, dude, yeah, I was sitting seriously looking at my drink cup going like, this is about to happen. If this thing doesn't, if this thing doesn't wrap up in 10 minutes, cause I'm not getting up. We're at the end of the movie. I've waited this long. I'm still going to wait, but good Lord, I don't think I've ever needed to pee more in a movie than I ever have with that one. Crap. What the devil was I about to tell you? It wasn't about, I can't remember what it was. I hate that, man.
Well, the one funny thing that came out of it is Delilah, she's brought her before. She's blind. So when she watches a show with us or she's hanging out in the room, she's listening.
Yeah.
She loved Smeagol.
Really?
Smeagol. She was like, where's Smeagol?
Yeah.
I'm like, he's going to be back at the end. He's going to be at the back of the end. So right. Just wait. You'll hear Smeagol again. I'm like, talk like Smeagol. Trying to get her. So let's name this new cat that we're getting Smeagol.
Oh, no, they great. Won't let me. Oh, that it. Would be great. But, if you get Delilah on your side,
yeah.
If well, you get Delilah on your side,
I just start calling the cat Smeagol, and Lila calls it Smeagol.
Yeah,
they're going to find themselves calling it Smeagol, just like we have a dog. His name was Harley. We got him from some people that had rescued him from Humane Society. They couldn't keep him. His name was Harley. I said, he looks like a stinky goober dog. And guess what his name is to this day?
Stinky Goober.
Goober. He's a crazy dog. I do have a feeling, though, from watching Lord of the Rings, and I love it, the Peter Jackson movies, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people are saying with Amazon doing this, whatever they're going to do, this TV series, well, we definitely don't need to redo the whole Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
I disagree after watching it again. I do too. I could use another version. I like Peter Jackson's version.
Yeah.
That's not the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
That's not the definitive. Because think about it, every classic, Treasure Island, one of my favorite books and movies growing up.
Yeah.
It's been redone every few years. Somebody does a new take on it.
Yeah. Like I can think of three just right off the top of my head for Treasure Island.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then one of those is the Muppets Treasure Island.
Muppets Treasure Island. There's that the one Disney did where he's in space.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't, and I kind of think it could.
I think it'd benefit great.
From a longer drawn out, even longer, more walking.
But do the Hobbit first, and then do. But I don't know if they'd redo the Hobbit because it's just had a movie just within like the past 10 years.
Yeah,
but like. I gotta admit, dude, the first Hobbit movie really disappointed me. Like, it really did. The first one really disappointed me with on how like they just added like Radagast the Brown. Like he's mentioned in the book, but you never meet the character in the book.
Oh, and here's Legolas.
Yeah, and exactly. What?
It's tying everything together. Yeah, I get it.
And then not only that, like the whole like one of my favorite parts in the book was the trolls.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they go and totally changed it, dude. With the way that they like trick the trolls by talking to them to staying up till the sun came up and turned them to stone.
Yeah.
Dude, that blew my head. That blew me away. I was like, you got to be kidding me. Really? You really just did that? Come on, Peter. Like, I was so disappointed, especially after I'd been so happy with the Lord of the Rings movies.
Yeah.
In which I've never read the Lord of the Rings books.
Yeah. And they're vastly different.
I figure that they were.
Lots of changes to it.
And yeah. So I can't really be disappointed with the movies, but I will say the movies, they're not really aging all that well. Like I was watching them and like a lot of the CGI, especially with like,
I had that feeling too,
where they're running through the mines of Moria.
Yeah.
And with the Smeagol, even like the Smeagol, like you could tell like that's so CGI.
But it was so ahead of its time.
Oh, it was.
Did it.
Oh God. Yeah. Cause I remember talking to you, like I didn't see the first Lord of the Rings movie in the theater. And I think you and I were at a family gathering or something like that. Like it was either like, it might've been Christmas.
Yeah.
I think it was Christmas, and we were talking about it, and you were like, dude, oh my goodness, it was so awesome. And then whenever I saw it, whenever it came out on DVD, I saw it, and I was like, wow, yeah, the Mines of Moria looks amazing. Like, it looks great. And then, of course, I saw Two Towers and Return of the King in theaters.
Yeah, yeah. The Balrog.
Oh, that's still one of my favorite parts, the whole, you shall not pass.
I loved the Ents still. The Ents still work for
me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They still look really good.
The ghosts at the end, the dead, the army of the dead.
Yeah.
I was thinking that could be really improved upon.
Yeah.
But again, for its time, it, you know, we're talking about 15 years ago.
Well, and there was a few little things also that kind of like, I remember, I think it's, yeah, it had to be the Two Towers because one of the big wolf beast things in the
wargs.
Yeah. Where those come out and attack and, you see the charge coming in with the cavalry, and I think Legolas is on the ground, and I think might be Aragorn or Gimli comes riding up, and he grabs the chest. Yeah, yes. And then he swings around the opposite direction, and I was just like, why did you do that? You could, because it would have, like,
the natural momentum. He should have put his arm out like that, and it should have flipped him up to the right side behind him.
Instead of on the left side.
I had the exact same thought watching it again. I'm like,
because the natural,
are they just doing that because he's a super elf and he can do things special?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it totally took me out of the moment because I was like, that's even like, but it totally didn't work. Like, understand that you want to make him look like he's freaking awesome. I get it, but like, just grabbing the breastplate, I can't think of the technical term.
Harness of horse.
Yeah, and it was the breast strap, like, as it's going by, if he's grabbing it with that arm, it's going to sling him up on this side instead of on the opposite side. And not only that, like, where he also grabbed it at, it's also going to sling him up on that side, just the momentum of it.
Just in an instant, physics alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to sling him to that side. You're not going to be able to jump all the way around in front of the horse and go from the other side. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, little things like that.
Just little things. But
it totally takes me out of the moment because it's just so overdone. And other things, like I said, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining because I know that I do, because there's a lot of things that are overdone in movies that I'm like, that's awesome. Like, you give me a Michael Bay movie and show me some explosions, I'm going to be happy.
Yeah.
I don't care. But yeah, little things like this.
I can't wait to find out what Amazon's doing, because there's so many. I mean, they could probably do an entire season or series about Aragorn growing up. Because my wife's like, well, why isn't he king? I'm like, I know this, but I can't remember. It's like he had grown up living in hiding out of fear that he'd be killed.
Yeah.
His dad died when he was two, and he was raised by Elrond.
Yeah.
Elrond and Aragorn's father. No, not father. Like great-great-great-great-grandfather were like half-brothers.
Oh, okay.
Or twins or something like that.
Huh.
Meaning
Aragorn has some
elven blood in him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So does Eowyn.
what's weird is Arwen is, however you say her name
Eowyn,
is.
Yeah, I don't know how you.
She is Elrond's daughter.
Yeah.
And who marries Aragorn.
Yeah.
Strider.
And gets some human
in. And Elrond is his uncle.
Yeah.
She was 22,100 years old when she met Aragorn when he was 20.
Wow.
And I told my wife, I go, whoa, rob the cradle much? I mean, that's really robbing the 2,000 years.
But they had Liv Tyler play her, so it was totally okay.
That's crazy.
Yeah, Liv Tyler. She's got a pretty face, man. She looks just like her dad. That's what's sad about it. Like
Steven Tyler, yeah. Every time I see her, I just think, that's Steven Tyler.
I know, right? And she does look a lot like him, but yet, I guess, like, without as many angles to her face. But, yeah, so anyways, I think that's going to do it for us. I think I'm going to call it on that.
I think we've covered everything we can cover. They could do so many things.
We didn't cover Smokey and the Bandit with Burt Reynolds passing away this week.
Yeah, Bert's gone. And you ask who could play those roles, and I don't know. I couldn't think of anybody that could play that.
Steven texted me his. He said that he would like to see Chris Pratt, and I could see Chris Pratt doing it, but Chris Pratt wouldn't be my pick.
To me, it'd be Chris Pratt being Burt Reynolds, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I said, I know he could do it, but
yeah,
that natural, just, how would you describe it? That. Talking about confident.
Yeah. Natural swagger.
Swagger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a natural swagger. And, like, I don't know. That's another one. I guess we'll have to come back to that one next week because I can't think of it.
Give us some more
I thought. Do know what car I'd like them to use, though.
What?
Be the Dodge Challenger.
Oh,
if you're going to use a new car, to me, that's like the epitome. Like, right there, that's like the muscle car of now. But, I mean, you can't really replace that Trans Am from back in the days, man. Mm.
No, Trans Am is pretty sweet.
Yeah, my uncle had one.
Oh, really?
My uncle Thomas had one. Oh, dude, it's so freaking awesome. That car was badass.
Yeah.
I remember we went to Cowboys game. We went to Dallas Cowboys and Pittsburgh Steelers preseason game. And we thought we were so freaking cool because
it's
we took
such a cool car.
We took
then.
The T-tops off and put them. They had like this little thing in the back where you put them in the trunk and it held them in place or whatever. We took the T-tops off and drove to this Cowboys preseason game. Thought we were just the coolest in the
kid
world.
In my high school had one.
Oh,
that
yeah.
looked just like it's black.
Yeah.
It was just, I was like, oh my God, I wish I could have that car.
Yeah. That's how my Uncle Thomas's was. His was the black one with the golden. What do they call it? The Thunder Firebird. Chicken or whatever? Yeah. Yeah, with the golden Firebird on it. Dude, that was a freaking awesome car, dude. Freaking awesome. And then we got lost after the game.
Oh, really?
Because it's one of those funny moments where we got lost after the game, and my mom used to drag us around all over the place, man. And we're driving around like there in like the Irving, Las Colinas area and stuff. And my dad and Thomas are like, where are we at? And Steven goes, we're in Las Colinas. They're like, we're not in Las Colinas. Steven's like, we're in Las Colinas. And as soon as we'd say that, we go right by the horses, like the statues. They've got those statues of the Mustangs or whatever.
Wow.
But yeah, anyways, I think that's going to wrap us up. That's it for story time. But yeah, rest in peace, Burt Reynolds. You will be missed. Yeah, we'll have to answer the question of who would you cast for Smokey,
yeah.
along with Snowman.
People, they could. If
I'm
they
sorry, Bandit.
Tweet us or yeah. whatever. They could. People could give their suggestions.
Yeah, give us your suggestions. Tweet us at the number 2BT show. That's at 2BT show. Email is the same thing as 2BTshow@gmail.com. That's the number 2BTshow@gmail.com. Why don't you do the Nerdy Legion one?
Go to Nerdy Legion. Check out a lot of fabulous podcasts. I just said that word is like the first time I ever said it.
I know, right?
Am I saying like, this correctly?
Is this new sensation that's on my tongue?
While you're there, also click the link for Audible. I think they still have the two books for a month for free, just for signing up.
Yeah.
Then they have thousands and thousands and thousands of books, and they just started a new program where every month you'll get a credit.
Yeah.
You choose your book you want. I still haven't chosen mine for this coming month.
I haven't either, but I did start the second book of Expanse.
There's also a new program called Audible Originals. There's
okay.
books of works of fiction, nonfiction, all kinds of books. They're giving you two free of those a month.
Oh, wow. That's freaking
and
cool.
And you can choose. I got one about the X-Files, and I got another one. I can't remember Michael Conley or Clark or something. Anyhow. I don't know, I can't recall what the title is, but it looks interesting and it's free.
Yeah.
So another incentive to checking out Audible.
Yeah.
And you know, Dave and I love it.
I love it.
You'll love it.
That's basically what I listen to. And the app is really good too.
It's like really good.
The actual phone app is great because you don't have to try to drag stuff over and load it up or whatever. You just pull up the app on your phone and your entire library is there. You just download the book that you want to, or you can stream it, whatever you want to do. It's freaking amazing.
Yep.
Check
out our buddy Retro Reprise.
Yes. Check out Adam over at Retro Reprise. He streams live on the Twitch every Friday night at midnight. And he also throws all his videos up on YouTube, so you can catch him at either place. Go by and check out Best of the Rest. They mentioned us this past week.
Yeah, we should have talked about that.
We should have, because we're just gonna have to do a. You know, I was thinking about it. Honestly, well, okay, no, I thought I hit a button just then. I was gonna I was gonna tap on the mixer. I was gonna honestly, what we could do, like, you know, OKC is about like what, like a 2-hour drive,
something like that. Yeah,
we could do a day trip up there. I know, yeah. I know. Dennis said that he would be flying in or
he
whatever.
He needs notifications so he can have time to come in.
So yeah. But I mean,
that would be fun. That shop there he told us about looks really cool.
Yeah.
And in Oklahoma City, I'm sure we can find somewhere we can eat.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Oh, God. Yeah. I don't think that I would be able to like afford staying a night,
yeah.
like get a hotel room. But like, you know, we could load up all of us, like split costs for gas.
Yeah.
And take turns driving or whatever, because it wouldn't be that bad.
It's just, not bad.
Yeah. Just up there and back. We could do it in a day easily.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So maybe look for that in the future. Might have a best of the 2BT rest crossover, cross mashup,
something
like that. That means we all got to wear each other's t-shirts or something like that.
The great Jay Loving, he's the original TBT from, because it's his name.
Oh, yeah. I just stole it from him. Oops. Ah, well, you know, it's a great name, so it just rolls off your tongue is what it is. Just, yeah. 2BT. Anyways, with that being said, I'm David.
I'm Michael.
2BT, signing out.
Adios.
Vaya con Dios.
I don't say goodbye. I say may the force be with you.
Awesome. Later, guys.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, heck yeah. I'll just rub it all over my lips.
Use your mind. You don't use your body. Where do we go with this?
I don't know. But... Exactly. That's 2BT style as we go off the rails all the blasting time.
I don't know if I should say that.
Nope. Nope. Yeah, you know.
It's going to get me in trouble.
Yeah, right. These views are not shared by the 2BT.
Good Lord. What? What made me this way?
It is hot.
It is hot.
So hot.
Kind of like me. It is hot.
Yeah, I like fish sticks. I like putting fish sticks in my mouth.
What?
Fish sticks.
Good God.
Oh.
Something went wrong somewhere or something went right somewhere.
Right.
There's a naked chicken there. Oh, yeah.
Well, I used to love her, but I had to kill her. I used to love her. Oh, yeah, but I had to kill her.
Hey, I mean, I love you in all sense of the word, all of y'all. But that's man, whatever. I'm the jerk that wrote a million word prequel to the real story.
Dude, I like. Too well.
Yeah. I don't know my words. I just like looking at the funny
ones. Right. You know your words. I don't know mine. You
get that wild. Whole alphabet thing confused. Right. No,
just do like I do. Give up. Just give up on everything. I don't care.
The environment's dying.
I don't care. Just give up.
Oh my.
This is fun for anybody listening. Oh my God.
You gotta play to win, man.
I want to make love to you, woman. I want to lay you down by the fire. Caress your womanly body. Make it moan and perspire.
Yeah. Water rum.
Boom, boom, boom. I can either A, clinch it, and hope that my body just reabsorbs it. Maybe it'll turn into a burp.
Burp. Yeah. Burp, burp. Are you ready for your vasectomy?
Mike, edit this out.
Yeah. I want to be captain of the committee that makes sure you guys don't F this up.
I swear to God, dude, it came out with a vengeance, too. I don't know. Oh, my God. I don't know. I'm like the... Yeah, it's glorious. Yeah. Santa Claus is real. Oh, well, look, he's not that bad of a dude.
Straight to the fart noises. There's only one day.
He's a little guy, red hair... that he likes to sing and play his lute.
I don't know, maybe it's my upbringing or something.
I don't know, like, it's just fun. I'm texting. Be like, oh, well, you know,
Tell me about how you met Blaze Foley and some of those early adventures you had with Blaze.
Well, I was playing the Bitter End in New York, and Blaze came down. It was kind of the last night, I think, of that gig. It was like a 4-day, 3-day type deal. And I finished playing, and up walks this strange-looking guy. And he introduced himself and said he was Blaze Foley and from Texas, and he'd heard about me, and he's from Austin. And I hadn't been to Austin too much for a while because I was living in Nashville and been on the road. We became immediate friends. And it was two West Texans in New York. And I'd been there kind of before, and he never had. But he had a room at the Gramercy Park Hotel, which is a hotel a lot of us stay at. And somebody, some well-meaning record guy, had given Blaze the power to sign his own tab, carte blanche room tab, anything you could sign for in the hotel. And so I moved in with Blaze. I moved out of my hotel and moved in with Blaze, and he was supposed to stay there for however many days to do something, meet somebody. And we bankrupted the record company. We were just drove room service into the ground. We'd order 30 tequila sunrises, one hamburger cut in half, and tip the guy, old black man, 60 or 70 bucks. And when this went on day and night for 3 days until the record company heard about it and arranged for us to fly to Nashville. It was cheaper to fly us to Nashville, where I lived, than it was to, put up with Blaze. It was wild times. There was a bunch. Every day with old Blaze was kind of some sort of an adventure.
He cut an album in Muscle Shoals. You went to Muscle Shoals for those sessions, yeah, didn't you?
That was a real adventure. I have a song, Blaze's Blues, which that's kind of, that little trip was kind of mentioned. And that kind of almost the same thing happened. I just had a new son born, my wife and I, and I'd planned it to be home until Will was, a month old or so, and go back and play gigs. I get this call from Blaze, and he's in Alabama, and he's in Atlanta at that point, and he's going to do a record in Muscle Shoals with this bunch of guys, and he wants me to be there. I told him, Blaze, I just can't. I mean, we had a baby a day and a half ago or so. And he was like, oh, man, you got to. Just wouldn't be the same if you weren't here, too. Blaze, I can't. These are the best pickers in the world. There's nothing I can add. I mean, I can't hardly sing harmony, this, that, and the other. And he said, well, you probably sing some harmony, and, you just be around and have a buddy to hang around with, this, that, and the other. And he kept calling and calling. I kept saying no. And finally it just got to where, just to keep him from calling, it's like, okay. But you have to get your friend, your record company, to buy the tickets, and I'll fly to Atlanta. We can ride in your record company's private airplane, which was part of the argument why I should go. They had their own airplane, and I was going to be treated like royalty and this and that and the other, so, which didn't make much difference to me. But finally, just because Blaze was calling me day and night, I just decided, well, I'll go for a couple of days, a few days. So we got there. I got to Atlanta, met his young guys are our age, who own this record company, and had a private plane and had a bunch of gold chains on. I noticed that right off. And got in their private plane and flew to Muscle Shoals and landed. And somebody picked us up and drove us to a hotel motel. And the head guy from the record company told Blaze and I that we were to wait at the hotel. They checked us in. We were to wait at the hotel for 2 days. First, it started until the next day because they were going to go check on trading this airplane for another airplane. So we go into the hotel. And I found out as soon as we got to the hotel room that they had given Blaze $300 cash. So there we are. Don't know anybody in northern Alabama. $300, and it didn't take us any time at all to figure out the logistics were. You called a cab, And you took about 6-minute cab ride across the Tennessee River, where you bought a pint of vodka, and then a 6-minute cab ride back. The cab ride was $5. So we figured that out right away. And we sat there, and we watched a football game, and, you know, just very serene and cool, waiting for him the next day, the next morning. And the next morning came, and no record company. Gets to be 10 or 11 noon. So we take another cab ride. We get a fifth of vodka, come back to the room. And that night, still no record company, no word. And it got started dawning on me, like, Blaze, yeah, and, you know, I think I know what kind of guys you're mixed up with. I mean, they're not thinking about you sitting here in this hotel room. You know, I mean, it may be a week before they get back. And so Blaze kind of kicked into gear. Maybe you shouldn't even have said that, but Blaze kind of kicked into gear. And it ended up, after about 4 days, Blaze is telling, he's like over peeking through the curtains. He's claiming to see Iranians with Uzi submachine guns around the pool and stuff like that. And I was trying to keep him under control. And finally I decided I can't stand anymore. And I was like no angel this whole time. And we've been in this one little room. It got to where Blaze wouldn't leave the room. It was terrible. And I got on the phone and I decided, well, I'm going to get Guy Clark to send me enough money and I'll take a bus to Nashville. And once I'm in Nashville, I can somehow get a plane ticket back to Texas and I'll be home and Blaze can do his record. But things by then were like much, you know, beyond what I was, you know, best laid plans of mice and men. But anyway, I got on the phone to call Guy and I don't know who Blaze thought I was phoning, but he jumped over the bed and ripped the phone out of the wall. At which point, the whole room was pretty much, his half of the room at least was trashed. And when the phone was ripped out of the wall, the motel operator became real interested and came up to see if everything was all right. I don't know what Blaze said to him at the door of the room, but he retreated and called the Florence, Alabama police, who arrived, and I was put into the unenviable position of being the peacemaker, which was all I managed to do was keep Blaze from being beaten to death and maybe even shot, you know, by these Alabama police who just, Blaze was in a rage, which he really could go into sometimes. I've seen Blaze at his most gentle and his most outrageous, and the Alabama cops were not amused and being called Nazi pigs and such by this screaming giant hippie. And one of them was, at one point, one of them was reaching for a club and the other one was reaching for his gun. So I jumped in the middle and talked as fast as I could about Blaze was really okay. He was just drunk and we've been here 4 days. So they just handcuffed Blaze, threw him in the back, and then kind of looked around at me. And I thought for an instant, you know, just a brief flashing minute, that they were going to let me go. And I couldn't, I mean, what was I going to do? I didn't have any money. They certainly weren't going to let me back in the motel. You know. And anyway, one of them said, take that SOB too. Handcuffed. And woke up in the Florence, Alabama jail, which is one of the worst places I've ever been. 30 or 40 minutes later, the people that had picked us up at the airport came and picked me up and drove around the courthouse a couple more times, and there was Blaze. So we're a happy little crew. Was back. The owners of the record company were still gone on whatever errand it was. And I got word that the owners were mad, I mean blazingly angry at me for throwing a wrench into their record operation. And this is after I'd been drug away from my day-and-a-half-year-old kid, told I was going to be treated like royalty, and all of this had happened. And I just said, man, that's enough for me. You know, they were saying, boy, you're lucky. What's your name and what's your name aren't here, man. And, I said, well, you just give me $10. Give me enough money for a bus ticket to Nashville and buy me a half pint of vodka and a Coke and drop me off at the bus station. And you won't ever have to worry about me again. I don't want to talk to anybody about anything anymore. And which they did, you know, and Blaze felt terrible about it. And the next bus to Nashville was about 4 hours, 5 hours. And they drove back up a couple of times because Blaze had explained the whole situation and told him that I had saved his life and it wasn't my fault. And my poor baby was at home. And finally found out the owners also got the information. And I got, they apologized. You know, and by this time I was back in Texas. I can't remember being as mad at a group of people as, right? And they would come back by and say that the owners had decided that it'd be perfectly all right if I stayed around. And it's just like the bus is in 2 more hours. When you want to just hang around with us, you don't want to sit here in the bus station. I'll just sit here. Thank you very much. And then, like, I didn't know that record ever came out, but you told me it did. And, shortly after that, the owners were indicted for, I think, conspiracy to, sell drugs or something.
I heard the FBI ended up with the masters to that album.
And the FBI got one of Blaze's records. I hope they listened to it.